From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Alex Kalanorkas, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Welcome to our latest episode, which is the latest accompaniment podcast to this week's Autosport Magazine. We're recording just a short while after the second of Autosport's two weekly press days has finished, and a bank holiday weekend always makes things a touch more challenging for magazine production. So my first question is to our chief editor, Kevin Turner, and that is, how did it go putting the magazine together this week?
Yeah, it was surprisingly smooth. Now I said that, the printers will catch fire or something, I suppose. But it was all good. As you say, bank holiday Monday with UK National Racing. Your other guest will know a thing or two about that as well. It's usually a bit of a nightmare, but it all went relatively smoothly today.
We'll come on to talk about what else is in the magazine later on in the podcast, but the cover feature for this week's Autosport Magazine is an interview with Red Bull star Max Verstappen, who I spoke to during the 2021 season opening Bahrain Grand Prix weekend. Now, before we get into Max's words and assess his chances of winning this year's Formula One world title, I'll introduce our second guest, who is a real-life racing rival of Verstappen. Now, considering the sensational rise that Verstappen has enjoyed, there's not all that many people who can call themselves that, in car racing at least. So, GP Racing editor Ben Anderson, welcome to the podcast. And what was your experience like going wheel to wheel with Max Verstappen?
Hello, thank you. Humbling, I think, is probably the word I'd use. you had this incredibly gifted teenager who'd barely done any car racing at all rock up in Sebring, doing the Florida Winter Series, it was called. It was a program run by Ferrari, principally to get Lance Stroll ready for car racing, as it turned out. He did make it to Formula One, so I suppose, it did its job. They were using Formula Abarth cars, which I think subsequently became Italian F4, and the idea was basically to get some winter testing in sunnier climes, but you got to race rather than just pound around the circuit on your own. I was invited to do the Sebring meeting, as I say, and Verstappen was there along with a host of other European F3 level drivers, so it's quite a high standard. Stroll was there too, and Max just tore it up, really. Quite raw but extremely fast, and he crashed me off actually in one of the races.
Real claim to fame.
We had a bit of an argument in the pits, and unfortunately his dad Jos backed me up, so Max had to apologise to me.
Nice. Wow. Does that still come up whenever you interview him?
I don't like to dwell on it. I mean, it's but a speck in the legend of his career already, isn't it? But when he got to Formula One, he did remember, and he once glibly remarked that I taught him everything he knew.
Well, before we get into the interview that I did with Max over that Bahrain weekend, let's actually talk about the Bahrain Grand Prix. Kev, what did you make of Max Verstappen's performance? Because he lived up to the billing in terms of he's got the fastest car, he did everything he needed to do, but he made it a bit hard for himself in qualifying by damaging the floor. And then when it came to the crucial wheel-to-wheel moment against Lewis Hamilton, he just by fractions came up short. But in terms of his overall performance, what did you think of that weekend?
Well, I mean, overall, it was a very good performance. I think it was the key thing for all of us, which led to this feature as well, is that it did prove that Red Bull has a competitive car this year. I think what you would say, though, is ultimately he lost the race in the fastest car, and Lewis Hamilton won the race in a car that wasn't the fastest. It's often said that Hamilton's had it easy because he's had the quickest car, but actually there are quite a few examples in his career now where he's won a race when he hasn't had the quickest car, and that was one of them. That was down to all sorts of factors, as you eloquently explained in your Grand Prix analysis, Alex. But one of those factors was that, Max didn't quite get it together when he tried to make the move. He just had that little kick of oversteer, which took him out of track limits. I don't think there's any debate about that. He was definitely off the road. And then he couldn't, Red Bull did the right thing, swapped them around. You think, well, he's going to go again. And it had just taken the edge off the tyres. So very good performance, but he's obviously going to have to be ever so slightly better if he's going to beat Lewis over the course of a full campaign.
Oh, we're talking about very fine margins, I think. It looked to me like Max hoped to get Lewis, and I think this is the most sensible place to have done it, on the main straight down into turn one. He picked up the DRS. He had a look the first time, then he had a proper go the second time, and Lewis covered the inside. And I think maybe that surprised Max that Lewis had enough in hand, straight line speed wise, to fend him off on the run down to that corner. And then, of course, you get the opportunity with the extra DRS zone now to have a go into turn four. But, you know, round the outside there, it's very risky. And Lewis was just being wily. You know, it wasn't a completely clean overtake before the corner. So it allowed Lewis to contest it. And he did exactly the right thing, just stuck his car on the inside line and said, well, you're going to have to go properly all the way around the outside wall of death. And, you know, Max just slightly misjudges it, goes off the track, so it's a fair cop. He can't take the lead that way. I kind of felt that probably he should have waited another lap and gone for it again into turn one. That's the place to do it, really. Lewis just played all the cards he had really effectively. I think also, to be fair to Max, you know, he was battling a few problems of his own, principally the differential thing early in the race. He would have been further ahead, I think, had the car been working properly in the first stint. And also just the tyre choice, you know, only two teams had the extra set of hard tyres available for that race, the other being AlphaTauri. And it turned out that that was the right tyre to have for the race. And of course, if Max had been able to go onto an extra set of hards in the middle stint, he could have extended that stint, which would have meant that he would have had better tyre life for the attack at the end. So small things that went against him, perhaps a touch of impatience when it came to actually getting the move done. And obviously Lewis, having all that experience, you know, he knew exactly, as we've seen many, many times in wheel-to-wheel fights down the years, exactly where to place his car to make it as hard as possible for Verstappen. And the slice of luck that Lewis had is that Max got it wrong on this occasion, but I'm sure he'll learn from it.
It was really interesting speaking to Max over that Bahrain weekend, because the sort of the timing ever so slightly worked against how it would go in the magazine, if that makes sense, because, you know, I always like to give a little insight into how we put these things together. But talking to a Formula One driver 2 or 3 days before the first Grand Prix of the season, they're still fully stuck in that pre-season testing. Oh, we won't know until qualifying, we won't know until the race, oh, you know, we feel good, everything went good, but we don't know, sort of thing. So it was just a little bit tricky to sort of phrase my questions to him, knowing that and knowing what his answers would be sort of in advance in terms of predictions or how things really felt, because they keep their cards so close to their chest. But that was just the way it was. It was the best time to speak to him, and, you know, it worked out really nicely in other ways, in terms of, you know, it's the sort of the star of the moment. It's the, can he finally take on and beat Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes? How are they going to fight back? You know, it's that's really the story right now. But it's really interesting speaking to him. Nevertheless, I've been sort of advised, I don't know if you found this as well, Ben, in the past, that, you know, he really opens up as an interview goes on. You know, if I glance back through the transcript, the answers are very, very short at the beginning, and by the end, they really are quite eloquent. They are going on, and maybe sometimes not so full of detail or forthright in his opinion, but still getting the words out. But I very much enjoyed our time. But yeah, Kev, what did you make, having gone through the feature and put it in the magazine this week, which, may I say, has a nice sort of stunning cover, I would say. Max was slapping with his helmet there. Yeah, what did you think of what Max had to say for himself?
Well, the key question I had, and I think probably everyone has, or the only question he hasn't answered really, is what can he do? Can he rein himself in over a championship contest? We know he's fast. We know he can win races when things are against him. He can pull off the overtaking manoeuvres. He's good in the wet. He's already ticked most of the boxes, but it's a different mentality sniping for the odd win when you know you're not really in the championship fight than it is when you're in that and you can't give points away. I think Hamilton, yeah, he knows when to not contest a corner. We've seen it a few times over recent years where someone like Verstappen or Charles Leclerc, actually, at Monza in 2019, they took the mickey a bit, but Lewis went, I've got a bigger picture I'm looking at here. I'm going to let that one go. You can have this small victory, win the battle, I'll win the war. Can Verstappen bring that into his game when he's in a championship fight? Because if he sends it down the inside somewhere and knocks the front wing off or whatever, suddenly it's not, oh, a possible win that I've lost. It's, oh, I've lost all those points to Lewis, because Lewis will not give those points away. We know that. So that's the question, I think, the only question mark remaining. And I thought he answered your question very well. It's something that he's thought of. He's never won a car racing championship, but he has won it in karting. What I thought was interesting is that he thinks that it'll be easier to fight for a championship than not, because he's assuming that if he's in the championship fight, he's got a better car, so he doesn't have to take so many risks, which is kind of an interesting attitude. And I wonder if that's how reality will be when he finds himself in that situation.
Well, I sort of made that point in my column for this week's magazine as well, in terms of the wider things that need to go right for, you know, to win a championship, in terms of, you know, the strategy calls that the teams have to make. You know, they took very different approaches in the season opener. Mercedes went aggressive, Red Bull a little bit more on the defensive, but still it would have worked out had he pulled the move off. So it's not quite as simple as having, we just have to have the fastest car, even though that is sort of the most fundamental factor in a championship fight. But Ben, what did you think of what Verstappen had to say about, you know, reflecting back to his experience in karting? You know, he's like, it feels natural, you know, that sort of understanding of what it takes to maybe not go for all the moves that are on offer. Is it quite as simple as that? Do you think that just the way the pressures amp up in Formula One makes it that much harder?
Someone of Verstappen's character, you know, he's so calm, really, in terms of believing in himself and knowing that he can do the job in the car. I know some of the incidents he's had over the years makes him look impetuous and maybe like he isn't so calm. I think he can get stressed if things are letting him down that are outside of his control. So I think if you see Red Bull repeat strategy mistakes, or you start to see some unreliability creep in from the chassis or the engine that takes points away, that will be the point where you'll see just how ready he is mentally for the championship battle, because, you know, it's a long season, but at the same time, those things can really cost you, especially if it's close. If Mercedes find more performance from their car and it starts to get tighter at the top between those two. But I think he can handle it. The probably the big test will be when it's right on the line towards the end. You know, if you've got a kind of, you know, Schumacher at Suzuka kind of, I've got to bag 1 point to seal the deal, but I'm having a race against the odds. You know, can he handle that when it's all on the line? That's going to be slightly different. But he's a quality driver, and as he says, he has won championships before at lower levels, not in cars, but in karts. So he knows what it takes. He knows how to pick battles. But it's one thing knowing it, it's another thing actually proving it. And probably the biggest thing that's going to play a role for him is the performance of the other two drivers in those respective teams. You know, we saw a race in Bahrain where Bottas wasn't really quite in the picture. You know, that might have made Hamilton's life easier if they could have really used him to pincer Max. But equally, Max had no wingman. You know, Perez has been brought in to do that job, to get in amongst the Mercedes and make their job harder strategically, and he wasn't quite at the races in Bahrain. And that's fine at the moment. You know, Max, you could see he was very frustrated to lose the race, but was immediately accentuating the positive. You know, we nearly won, we got second, we've got a quick car, we're on pole, and we haven't had a season like this before. But, you know, if Perez can't get his act together and he starts losing marginal races because the second Red Bull isn't in the fight, then that's going to start eating away at his calm demeanour, I think. But that said, he's got a very fast car, and he's been driving, I think, probably a little bit over aggressively on the basis that he needs to do that to make up some of the pace deficit to Mercedes over the last few years. I think Leclerc was doing something similar in the Ferrari last year. So just having a quicker car that's more capable in more conditions should allow him to relax into his driving and not need to take so many risks.
Actually, it occurs to me that there's a bit of parallel with Ayrton Senna's early career, in that they both spent just a year in, you know, their entry level team, if you like, Max slightly more than that before he went to Red Bull in 2016, and then they were in a team that was kind of fighting for wins, kind of had a history of being able to win championships that hadn't done for a little while, and you then kind of had the same question of, you know, would they be able to live in a championship chance? Now, in Senna's case, of course, he got fed up with waiting for Lotus to be able to fight for a championship, went to McLaren, did win the championship. Now, he actually did still make some mistakes in 88. You'll see, hit the wall at Monaco. He had more bad days than Alain Prost did, I would suggest, in 88. But the points, it was best 11 scores count, so he'd get away with it. Obviously, Verstappen doesn't have that, because all points count now, all races count. But I suspect that Verstappen's probably a little bit better prepared. It's a little bit later in his career. I think he's shown, you know, some of those moves that he was doing in his first few years in F1, the moving around under braking, that really was pretty out of order, and that he never seemed to, he always gave the impression that he wasn't learning. And even in 2018, when he seemed to bring himself back a bit after all those shunts, he said, no, I'm still driving the same. Whatever he says publicly, clearly he is a more rounded driver now than he was then. He has changed his, you know, changed his way, and I think he is probably ready to win a championship. And, you know, we're just hoping that that the performance difference between the Red Bull and the Mercedes is just right for that to be a fight that goes all the way to the end of the season.
Well, let's talk about that 2018 season. And Ben, maybe if I could come to you on this. I mean, what was it like sort of noticing what Verstappen did over that season? Because he goes through this run of errors in the early part, and he almost refuses to acknowledge that he's doing anything wrong. Maybe he's pushing a little bit too hard, or he needs to rein anything back. And sort of he just does it without sort of saying, oh, yeah, I am. This is what I'm going to do now. But it almost went a bit too far where he was still being asked about it. And I think, wasn't it Canada? And he went a little bit over the line in his answer to one of the journalists in the press conference. So, yeah, what was it like? Sort of what did he change? And but why did he not perhaps do it faster?
A lot of it is just experience. That's what he'll say, and it seems like a kind of non-answer, but I think it's fair enough. You know, he's come into F1 in a bit of a whirlwind, got into a top team in a bit of a whirlwind, but also the time that he's spent with that top team, they're going through a really rough period. A lot of politics with their engine supplier, a lot of letdowns. You've got an established ace there in Daniel Ricciardo, and then there's a new dynamic because Verstappen's pushing him very hard. The team's kind of gravitating a bit towards Max for the future, but also trying to keep Dan happy, at least at the start. And Max is obviously impatient. He, if you look at the trajectory of his career and the fact that he's accelerated himself through from karting to Formula 3 to Formula 1, pushed to get into a Formula 1 seat as soon as possible, and that's obviously why he went with Red Bull when there was that tug of war over his contract when he was in F3 between Red Bull and Mercedes. Now he was and still is, I suppose, a young man in a hurry to win as quickly as he can, and I think that manifested itself in his driving. And you saw this impatience, this desire to be first in every session. That's what let him down at Monaco. He crashed when, you know, a pole and a win was nailed on for him, really, if he could have seen off Ricciardo. And I think that was the key moment when he finally realised that, you know, there wasn't some other external factor that was letting him down or causing him to make the mistake. You know, whether it be, you know, the two Ferraris at Spa when he's gone down the inside in an impetuous lunge, but there is another car on the outside that's turned across and he can't, you know, he says he can't legislate for that. There was always a debate over the things he was doing. Well, you know, if this other thing was different, if I had a better engine, I wouldn't need to defend like this. If the other car hadn't done a stupid move turning in on me, we wouldn't have crashed. There was always something else to blame. But in Monaco, there was nothing to blame. There was just him going too hard, too soon in the weekend, and then shredding his weekend to bits. And I think at that point, he had to reflect on the fact that he couldn't hide, and he had to just rein it back ever so slightly. I don't think Max likes to kind of admit or talk about this process, maybe because he sees it as a sign of weakness to acknowledge publicly that you've got, you know, chinks in your armour or things that you need to work on. But if you speak to Red Bull, as I did at the time, you know, they will say that weekend was a turning point in terms of him changing his attitude slightly, maturing, and then just trying to, you know, build experience through the weekend, let it come a bit more naturally, dial it back to sort of 95% rather than 100%, so it all flows a bit more easily. And of course, you know, as things have developed since then, you know, Red Bull's moved on from Renault, they've moved on from Daniel Ricciardo, everything has come together a lot more for Max. You know, he's in an environment that he knows well now. He's the team leader, the guy whose voice counts for the most, and that all just helps, you know, this feeling that you know, you're centered and you know what you're doing. You don't have to prove something to everyone every time you're on the track.
One of the most interesting elements of speaking to Max in that interview was just you know, as the first time I'd done a one-to-one with him. Obviously, as I explained in the magazine, all these long-form interviews have to be done sort of via Zoom now because of the COVID restrictions. But just listening to his answers, there's just a sort of ironclad certainty about everything he does. You know, yeah, like I said at the beginning, he was just giving shorter answers. We were talking a little bit about testing, and, you know, I wanted to get that out of the way, the sort of, well, we don't know where we stand sort of things. But at every point, he was unequivocal. I think there's one answer he gives, which we're going to come on to talk about in a moment, where I felt like I didn't catch him out, but I got a real sort of, oh, okay, let me just think about that, and here's what I'm going to say. But for everything else, he's just so utterly assured. I think that comes across in his driving as well, how he talks to the team. I think about that 70th anniversary win where he was just unstoppable on the day. And yet Mercedes at that point of last season still had an incredible performance advantage over Red Bull. You know, okay, the conditions and the tyre compounds really, really did change things for that weekend. But just the way he was interacting with his team, it was just, no, I'm not holding back. I'm doing this now. I'm utterly certain in what I'm doing. And he was proved to be completely correct. So, Kev, what do you make of Verstappen's character and how do you think that came across in the interview as well?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. He's a very sure young man. And I, when he first came into F1, I did wonder whether he would be able to learn, you know, some of the responses to mistakes that he'd made or clashes he'd been involved with, such as the Spa one with the Ferraris that Ben mentioned. I thought, it took Senna, again to use the parallel, an awfully long time to stop getting involved in silly incidents. And you might argue that Senna and Schumacher continued being involved in incidents when it suited them throughout their careers. And I did worry that Verstappen would fall into that trap after an era of Alonso, Button, Vettel, Hamilton actually all fighting pretty fair. But to be honest, I think Verstappen has matured. He has got that experience. As Ben says, he's in a much more, it's his team, isn't it? You know, number one drivers do normally flourish when they are number one. I know as fans, we always like it when you get, you know, two bulls in the same team, excuse the pun. But actually, if you're running the team and if you're the driver in question, normally you build it around the number one driver. And that's when, you know, we've seen Lewis drive at his best since he's been partnered with Bottas, not having the niggle with, you know, Nico Rosberg. I guess the interesting bit, which I think you were sort of alluding to, was when you asked him who, apart from him, was the best driver on the grid, which did catch him out, which was good, because you could see, even in the transcript, you can kind of feel him thinking about it. But I think he gave you a really honest answer. He made the point that there are lots of good drivers in the field, which is it sounds like a cliched response, but I think he genuinely means it. You know, when you've got people like George Russell at the back, you know, these guys know who's good. You know, the top drivers know who are up there. So he's absolutely right to say there are lots of good drivers on the grid. But then he said, and you can't look past Lewis. So he didn't take the opportunity to rubbish Lewis either. So I thought it was a very fair, very honest answer. And I thought in the interview overall, he came across as being rather more thoughtful than I'd perhaps given him credit before.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think what was really interesting about that answer was why he highlighted Hamilton. It was like, yeah, okay, yeah, he's had the best car, but he wins races that he's not supposed to win as well. And the one he used, obviously, because this was taking place before the Bahrain race, was Turkey in the wet. And I think everybody involved in that race knew what an incredible job Hamilton had done, because Mercedes was all at sea on that track surface. It's always a bit unpredictable, it's always chaotic, and Verstappen himself came a cropper, Hamilton didn't, and he delivered a performance for the ages. And you know, I also asked Max about, you know, he was the only driver that could get anywhere near the two Mercedes cars last year. Like, there was time after time we were sitting in the media centres, we were watching things along on TV, and they're just gone. They're just in another league. He couldn't necessarily beat them as he did as the 70th anniversary Grand Prix, but he was up there with them, putting pressure on them. And I said, you know, did you learn anything from watching what Lewis does? And he said, no, I only look at myself. Yeah, I do have a little look to see what other people are doing, but I'm just looking to myself first. There's no sort of, oh, I need to be that kind of driver, I need to do that, use that, those sort of tactics. And again, it was that sort of that real certainty that he was just giving throughout his answers. I just thought it was so interesting, considering he's still a really young guy. But yeah, it sort of included in the more questions that I asked him about Hamilton was, you know, how much would it mean for you to end Lewis's reign as the top driver in Formula 1? Because it's happened so recently. Kev, you mentioned Ayrton Senna. Obviously, after him, Michael Schumacher came along as the dominant driver. Fernando Alonso defeats him. Now it's Lewis Hamilton after Sebastian Vettel's had all his years winning with Red Bull. And he didn't really answer that question. He did give me a long answer, but there was no sort of, he wasn't biting on that one. But Ben, do you think he is the driver? I'm going to give you the question. I'm going to put it all on you now. Can you give me the answer that I wanted Max to give me? Is he the driver to finally end Hamilton's reign?
I think he's the most likely, isn't he? Based on, you know, the hindsight we have of seeing the first race, which obviously you didn't have the benefit of when you were doing the interview. he's got the, it seems anyway, okay, it's one race, so let's not get two carried away, no Horner, said you need probably three or four races to get a feel for exactly how the land's going to lie before the rest of the season. But given the strong start Red Bull's made, the fact that Honda have put everything into this last season before they walk away and hand the keys over to Red Bull entirely, he's got to be the most likely. I can't see Bottas doing it, because the pattern since 2017 is just repeated. You know, he can, in certain conditions, when things are smooth, over one lap, he can beat Lewis on occasion or get, you know, extremely close. But more often than not, you know, Bottas is going to put in a few races where he underperforms relative to where the car can be. Whereas Lewis, as we discussed, he's going to win races that he shouldn't win and finish in positions that he shouldn't finish, given the circumstances. That's the sign of a really, really top driver. And Max has been doing that on his way up through. So now he's got a car that potentially could take the fight. You have to think, well, you know, at the moment he has the fastest car, and if Red Bull maintains that position, then by rights he should be able to win the most races and the world championship if he's good enough. I think he is. I think there are others that could also do that, but they don't have the same opportunity that he has.
I've got a couple of things to that. First of all, I completely agree. I think it's the combination of ability with opportunity. You know, I think there are probably another, I'd say there are another maybe four drivers on the grid. I'd say
who would you name, Kev?
So I'd say that the ones with the potential to end the Lewis reign, if you like, at this point, apart from Verstappen, are Leclerc, not going to have the opportunity. Alonso, not going to have the opportunity. You know, the Alpine did not look very good, did it? It's not going to be a world championship winner in the next 2 years. George Russell, but again, he might get the opportunity, but it might be when Lewis retires. And the other one, I'd say maybe it would be a Daniel Ricciardo, but again, he's not in there, because I think he's someone that deserved to have a championship shot when he was... Is he past his peak? Don't know. But in those middle 2000s, when he was at Red Bull before Verstappen came along, he was really mega. And I think he deserved to be in a championship fight, and you know, unfortunately, he might not ever get it. But
Max saw him off, though, didn't he? So the argument against Ricciardo is that, you know, Max turned out to be the biggest rooster in the hen house there.
Yeah, so it was quite marginal, though, because Ricciardo did outscore Max in 2017. He had a better start to 8. I mean, yes, you would put the money on the younger guy, wouldn't you? I can see why, yeah. Christian Horner's a bit miffed that he didn't keep them together, because that was a pretty awesome combination. But the one thing I didn't buy about Verstappen's responses is the whole, it doesn't matter who I beat sort of thing. Yeah, I just want to be world champion. I'm sorry. Like, you to be the guy that stops Lewis Hamilton's run, that means something. It might not mean something to him now, but it would do in future, and it would do to a lot of other people as well. You know, Fernando Alonso, one of the reasons that he will be, I mean, yeah, should be considered a legend, is he was the guy that stopped the Michael Schumacher run. And if you take Hamilton out of the equation over the last few years, you know, we'd be talking about Verstappen already in much higher regard. Like the Brazil 2016 race, when he made the rest of the field look pretty daft, went around the outside of Rosberg. You know, in any other, pretty much any other time, that would have been like an absolutely epic wet weather Grand Prix win by the next big thing, one that we'd put in the list of great wet weather drives. But Hamilton was ahead and beat him. And when Verstappen was asked, oh, could you have beaten Lewis? He's like, well, no, because he was driving all the right places as well. So he's got this guy who's in the way, who's as good as he is, with more experience and mostly with a better car. It's got to mean something if he can finally, you know, beat him. I think it would mean something to a lot of people.
I think you can tell already that Max has the respect for Lewis because of the fact they've now had a few wheel-to-wheel battles. That's the bit that really tells you, you know, especially when, you know, your equipment's different to the other guy. You know, you can't tell how you really stack up driver to driver unless you're driving the same car in the same team and you can lay it all out and see. But when you're in battle, that's when, you know, things are a bit more instinctive and you can see what drivers are made of. And it won't have escaped Max's attention that Lewis has done similar things to Max in winning races against the odds, doing things that seem a little bit otherworldly in certain conditions. You mentioned Turkey last year. You know, that's one of the most outstanding drives of Lewis's career. And, you know, while Bottas was busy trundling around near the back and being lapped in the same car. So, you know, that no one can fail to notice that. And now Max has been able to fight Lewis. And Bahrain, I think, is another example. You know, Lewis has managed to get one over Max there, and that will register, because Max will have been expecting, even though the race didn't pan out super smooth for him, it was there for the taking. And he would have thought, as he charged towards turn four, I've got him. And then he comes out and realises that he sort of has, but hasn't really, and has to give it back. And then, oh no, now my tyres have gone and I can't launch another attack. So that's Lewis getting one over him in an inferior car. Not many people have done that to Max Verstappen in his career so far.
The question has also got to come to Red Bull now, I think, because it's really interesting seeing the sort of dynamic swing between the two teams. Now, there's arguments quite rightly made that apply some pressure to Mercedes and they do crack when they're not completely dominant, as we've seen for so many years. However, in Bahrain, Mercedes straight away knew it had to go aggressive and succeeded. It needed Verstappen to make an error for Hamilton to win, you know, and a combination of everything. But as you say, Ben, you know, there was that sort of slight critical element that Verstappen made about the hard tyres not being available, and sort of saying, you know, maybe we need to look at how we do our practice programmes. So, Kev, what do you think about Red Bull? Is that operation got what it takes to come out, even though at the moment it does look like it has that critical advantage of the car?
Yeah, I think so. I think Red Bull consistently been one of the... Okay, so again, I guess the driver analogy works again for the team, in that it was different taking pot shots and risking things when you knew you didn't have the quickest car, and you do have to slightly change that, you know, when you've got the fastest car. But it's not that long ago that they were winning. Yeah, they've obviously consistently won races, but fighting for championships. They are one of the... absolute, probably the best team in the pits, in terms of that they often have the fastest pit stop in each Grand Prix.
Oh, they are. I think it's fair to say that they've consistently, over the last few years, even when they've been kind of nowhere in the championship, they are the best in the pits.
Yeah, if I were Max, that would not be a major concern of mine. I think Red Bull absolutely, you know, that they know exactly what it takes to win. They've got that. They've got Mercedes, I think, you know, in such a strong target, but we've seen weaknesses from Mercedes in the pits, and I don't just mean the Sakhir Grand Prix with all the wrong tyres in the wrong places, which was a particular comedy stop, wasn't it? But there have been other instances where Mercedes have dropped the ball, lost races for Hamilton, and you don't really see that with Red Bull as much. So I'd say that they're... Yeah, the one thing that they've just been lacking these last few years is a quicker car, and more importantly, a quicker car from the start of the year, because we know that they're good at developing a car through a season as well. Okay, last year was probably a little bit generous to them, because Mercedes turned the development off on the car so early after the Belgian Grand Prix. But I think Red Bull's consistently developed their car very well during campaigns in recent years, so that box is ticked as well. So finally, they've started the year... you know, on the front foot, so to speak. So, yeah, I think that this is definitely their best opportunity for a championship since 2013.
Ben, do you think we might reflect back, and I appreciate it is difficult to give a big answer on this after just one race, but look back on Mercedes taking that decision to not update the W11 after Spa in August, and letting Red Bull get closer and closer and closer until the point where it won the season finale and carried that momentum, because that is a big thing in all of sport over the off season and into its new work on the sort of updated cars rather than brand new cars. Do you think potentially Mercedes will look back on that and think maybe we should have done things a bit differently?
No, I don't think so. I think that's been one of their big strengths during this run, that, you know, they've baked in a performance advantage from the start of the season, and then use the opportunity that presents to shut development off, focus on next year's regulations, and try to get next year's car ahead of the opposition again, and maintain that head start, if you like. I call it the virtuous circle, and they've been in it for year after year. Okay, it hasn't worked out this time, but we also don't yet know exactly how these rules will... or these tweaks to the floors and the other associated geometry for this season will... fully affect the cars. Okay, we've had one 3-day test and one race weekend on the same track, and it looks like it has massively hurt Mercedes and, you know, their chief customer, if you like, Aston Martin, with this low rake philosophy. But at the same time, we don't yet know and haven't seen what Mercedes has got up its sleeve to kind of finesse that design. Okay, they've got the pressure of 2022 to think about, and no team will be wanting to spend too much time or money on this car because of the major rules reset. But you'd imagine Mercedes have budget cap allowing their working group set up already, and they're advanced on that project. So they'll have a certain amount of resource to throw at this car. They'll relish the challenge of the rules again being tweaked to basically slow them down and try and end their reign. And it happened in 2017. That was meant to be the rules reset that brought Red Bull back into play and clipped Mercedes' wings, and they went out and continued winning championship after championship. So I think they'll get off as an engineering group on that challenge, and they could still meet it. We've only had one race. They might turn up at the next race with a few tweaks, some greater understanding of a different setup, and then suddenly they unlock a bit more performance and it's a closer fight. Red Bull, because they developed all the way through last year, maybe they don't have so much performance envelope to explore with this car, and they'll reach the peak of development on this design much sooner than Mercedes does with theirs. So I still see the potential as the year progresses for a convergence of those two cars in terms of their pure performance. And that's, maybe it just sounds optimistic, but of course that's what we need for this title battle between Max and Lewis to evolve into the spectacle we all hope it can be.
And to back up Ben's point, actually, on answering your question about, are they regretting not doing that development? If you look at the reasons that we believe at this point after one race why they've lost their advantage, it's because of cutting a hole in the floor, which has stuffed the low rake concept, as Ben mentioned, and Red Bull sorting out their skittish rear end, which obviously Mercedes couldn't have any influence on. So it, on both of those counts, it makes no difference whether they started carried on developing the W11 all the way through the year or not. I think they're independent of that fact. But what I do hope, I hope Ben's right about the convergence, because all the teams, Ferrari have already said stuff 2021, we're looking at 2022. If Red Bull and Mercedes are close enough to go, we'll just keep pushing with these cars a bit longer because we want to win the championship, and everyone else goes, right, well, we're out of this and we're going to develop 2022 cars, hopefully that'll allow that midfield battle to get a bit close to Red Bull and Mercedes for when the new rules come in. I mean, do you remember that when the rules changed in 2017, Ferrari were an awful lot closer that year than they had been in 2016. It brought people towards Mercedes. It was still impressive that they won out. But 2017, 2018, Ferrari with a bit more luck could have won it in 17. I'd argue that if you swap Vettel and Hamilton around in 2018, a Ferrari driver would have won the World Championship. So hopefully, with a bit of Red Bull Mercedes battling this year, we'll have a 3, 4, 5 teams in the fight next year. That's the dream.
It is a really hard call for Mercedes, because Red Bull really want this championship. You can just sense that they've thrown everything at it. Honda's thrown everything at it. Honda's come out of the blocks with a really good package, it seems, and of course there's no development allowed this year, that you've got what you've got, so you can only finesse what's there. So Mercedes really, they have to decide how much they want this eighth, because Red Bull are there and they're going to be pushing to take it away this year before the rules reset. I'm sure Red Bull won't sacrifice 2022 for 2021, but when it comes to judging that equation, they're not going to do a Ferrari all in for 2022 and you've just got what you've got. They're going to push hard. So if Mercedes wants this, they're going to have to push hard too. And that's what we want, to avoid this season just becoming, a sort of drab, more of the same holding pattern until 2022.
Well, I've got one last question that I kind of want both of you to answer. And that sort of concerns about what we might learn about F1's best team in recent years and F1's best driver in Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton. Because I found it absolutely fascinating watching Mercedes' reaction to winning in Bahrain, because I think there was a very real sense that they utterly surprised themselves that they did win. There were messages pinging about press WhatsApp groups being like, Toto's media call is delayed by 15 minutes. It's a bit chaotic right now. And I think that just shows you that it's like, hang on a second, this is a real turn up for the books. And how often have we been able to say that in the last 7 years? It's really different. James Allison, in those amazingly open YouTube videos that Mercedes produces, talking about what it was like to win that race from inside the garage, you know, it's like he was chest burstingly, I think was the phrase that he used. And I just thought that, you know, that real tension of doing something that they weren't expecting really, really shone through. And I think that you always learn something fascinating, whether it's succeeding against the odds or how you react to losing a race when you should perhaps win it, is the most interesting things in all sport. But Ben, why don't I come to you first? I've sort of explained my thoughts there on how I think we learned a bit about Mercedes last weekend. But what might we learn more about Lewis Hamilton this year? Because he's always spoken about wanting to take on the younger guys wheel to wheel and beat them. And that just adds to his legacy if he can do it. It adds to his enjoyment of Formula One if he can do it. But yeah, what things might we potentially see about Lewis Hamilton that maybe we haven't seen in the past or just not seen for a while?
Well, it's the last thing for him to tick off, isn't it, really? You know, he's, as you say, he's mentioned several times in the past how, you know, he's constantly looking for ways to improve, to raise the bar, to innovate, to get better, that he wants young guys to come up and push him. It hasn't really happened, but now it looks like it is starting to happen. And there's, you know, there's kind of the double threat, isn't there? Because you've got Max on the one hand, in the other alpha team of this season, hopefully giving it to him at every race meeting this year. But you've also got the kind of George Russell up and coming within the Mercedes operation aspect, the possibility of Mercedes looking at Max to join Mercedes in some kind of Russell Verstappen super team, as Zak Brown was stirring during the Bahrain weekend. You've got Lewis kind of mulling his own situation. How long does he continue? Can he extend this 1 year contract he's got? There's a lot swirling around, a lot for him to deal with, more to manage than ever, really, along with, you know, the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. And then after all of that, he's got to have some space in his head for how does he go racing with a car that's not started the season as the best. I mean, you could say, you know, Mercedes have been in a slightly similar position as regards kind of 2018. You know, Kev mentioned that Ferrari probably had the quickest car on balance that year, and with a better driver than Vettel was that year, might have won the championship. But it hasn't felt yet since the hybrid engines came in that Mercedes have had quite this bigger challenge to get on top of their car, and they haven't been really chasing a target. It's always been a marginal tyres-based thing, a swing from session to session, but not really a whole weekend where, you know, they were on the back foot. And I think that's why you saw the reaction you saw from them. It's probably in some ways a refreshing position for them to be in. You know, they've come to a race not really favourites, and certainly in their own minds not favourites, and won it. They've stolen it from Red Bull, and there's no better feeling in racing than doing that, because if you turn up and you're quickest and you've got the quickest car, you should win. If you turn up and you haven't got the quickest car and you somehow manage to finish first, that's the best result you could get, better than you expected. So I think the way Lewis won that race, you saw all of his kind of guile, his canny racecraft, his kind of ability to keep the Pirelli tyres working and alive while lapping extremely quickly. That's something I think Max is very good at, and showed in the earlier days of his career at Toro Rosso when the tyres were even more fragile. But Lewis is an absolute master of that. It's one of the, even though I think he doesn't get enough credit for it, it's one of the reasons that Bottas really struggles relative to Lewis in races. So you're already seeing, I think, the kind of best of Lewis. Of course, James Allison says that Lewis tends to start the season a little bit quietly in terms of his own performance, and then he manages his energy levels and builds up as the championship progresses and kicks on in the second half of the year. That's what we saw in 2017, 2018 in those Vettel-Ferrari fights. So that's the interesting bit for me. It's like, what is there left for Lewis to find, and will he have to dig that bit deeper to take the fight to Max if Red Bull, Honda manage to stay in the game all the way through the first part of the season into the second part of the season?
I don't think we'll learn anything about Lewis this year. I think what will happen is that all he will do is convince some of the non-believers, although if you're still a non-believer at this point, then there's probably no hope, really. I think that he will pull out some amazing wins and fights that is basically we've seen him sporadically win races for Mercedes when they shouldn't have won. Italy 2018 would be another one. And I think he'll just do more of that. But I think that Verstappen is too good and the Red Bull will be too fast over the course of the season for him to win the championship. So I think it'll probably be a sort of a heroic, some mega drives, probably worthy of his top 10. I'll have to redo that list yet again at the end of the year. And he'll finish second in the championship. And I suspect he'll absolutely thrash Bottas. I think, you know, when the going gets tough and Hamilton has to put out his best stuff, then Bottas will be found more wanting. In fact, you saw it. You used to see it with Michael Schumacher and Rubens Barrichello. When the cars were good, Rubens could be quite close to Michael and sometimes beat him. But when the car was a bit not there or he was in a championship fight, you know, sometimes he was, you know, he was in a different postcode. So I think we'll see some of that. I think they'll really elevate. The interesting thing, I think, is if Perez is going to be able to give Bottas a run for third in the championship. I think that could be quite interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, one thing I think we definitely will learn about Lewis Hamilton in 2020 is how he gets on as a team owner in another form of motorsport. Obviously, Extreme E made its debut last
weekend.
Wonderful
segue, love it. That's a pro right there, that, isn't it?
Perhaps that's something that our readers should also check out in the magazine this week, which is Matt Hughes' report from Saudi Arabia, Kev. But what else is in the magazine?
Well, just a shout out to Matt Hughes as well, who seemed to be in and out of digital contact throughout it, what felt like a month was actually something more like a week and a half, I think, as he tried to chase, follow and generally flag down electric cars in the middle of a desert. But I think we did manage to get lots of good interviews because, of course, once he caught up with the stars like, you know, Loeb and Jenson Button, they didn't have anywhere to go. So they were stuck with Matt Hughes in the middle of a desert. So it was definitely worth sending him.
Our condolences to them.
I don't know who to feel more sorry for, really. Anyway, no, I digress. One driver who did win championships in junior single seaters, Raphael Marciello, through F3 and then got to F2 or GP2 as it was then, and his career ran out of momentum. He's now one of the world's leading GT3 drivers, and James Newbold has spoken to him about what went wrong and why he doesn't really care that it went wrong. He's quite enjoying life going after the big endurance races, and he's pretty good at it, you have to say. So sort of a nice feel-good story there from someone who is, I think, one of our leading GT drivers in the Autosport Top 50 last year. And then sort of on a completely different but retro theme, because obviously I love to include a bit of retro whenever possible, we've got author Brian Harvey has done a piece for us looking at F1 drivers when they appeared in F2. So that's current F1 drivers stepping into F2, which for a modern young audience probably sounds a bit crazy. But in the 60s and 70s, that used to happen all the time. So Jackie Stewart, Jim Clark, Jochen Rindt used to go down into F2 and have more battles there. And in fact, some of them were closer because they were lower powered cars, and they tend to have, you know, Formula Ford style slipstreams at some places. So there's a little piece on that, and then he's picked out 10 epic races that were during that period. So that's quite a fun one, something a bit random. And then obviously we've got our usual our national guys, Stephen Licorice and Stefan Mackley, have put together the national section and looking at the rise of GT Cup, which I remember starting out as basically a place for old GT3 cars, some British GT cars, and now seems to attract some quite modern kit and some quite proper drivers. I think Adam Carroll's dipped in and out of it, so perhaps we should get Ben a guest driving it. That's what we should do, get Ben out there in a GT Cup race.
I thought you were talking about proper drivers, Kev.
You weren't that far off Rob Bell in the GT3 McLaren in the track test, which is also coming to an Autosport magazine near you soon.
Still needs some work. I mean, at the top of the show, we talked about Max Verstappen. I couldn't hold a candle to him. You know, that's proper drivers. I think Marcello might have been there as well, actually. I'd have to check, because he was on Ferrari's books at that point.
It also sounds like you more than held your own in the argument in the pits against Max Verstappen, which I imagine at a young age was quite intimidating.
He was a young guy. He was only 16 or 17. So, I mean, if I can't stand up to a 16-year-old, then there's not much hope for me.
Well, on that note, I always like to leave people laughing. That's our podcast for today. But before you go, here's what you can see right now on Autosport Plus. is my weekly column that this week discusses the critical strategy calls Red Bull and Mercedes are going to need to ace in 2021. Matt Q speaks to one of the scientists working on delivering the environmental aims of the new electric racing series Extreme E, while Mark Gallagher delves into the new team structure being deployed by the Williams F1 team in a feature that also appears in this month's edition of GP Racing Magazine. New Autosport Plus subscribers who sign up today can use the promo code PODCAST during checkout to save 50% off their first payment. Go to autosport.com/plus and click sign in at the top of the page, then use promo code PODCAST for that 50% discount. Thanks for listening today, and we'll be back soon.